You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
All right, securityjabber.com. My name's Dave Glenn. I'm joined for segment two of episode 32 by
Matt Thompson,
Jason Brown,
Dan Gregory.
Hey, Todd.
And Todd Besky.
Todd Besky. Sorry, just had me distracted.
Regular, semi-regular guest host.
Michael Scalfani.
And special guest.
Zach Sarakin.
Zach Sarakin. So in the last episode, we welcome. In the last episode, we talked about cryptocurrency, talked about the marketplace a little bit, had some friendly discussions around the current state and future of cryptocurrency. Yes.
At some point, can we talk about currency versus money versus value versus
like... No, there's no questions.
Versus like trade or, you know, how do we dictate what has value and what we use for a medium of exchange? Because I think that ties into this whole conversation of Bitcoin, why it is valuable.
How about right now?
All in all, it's just another brick in the wall.
I did have one thing, guys. I found out over the weekend that every Mac has Bitcoin miner built into it. And if you put in a command, you get that Bitcoin turned right on.
So did you start mining?
Yep. I'm pretty sure the command is
don't do
RM
it.
RM space.
Stop.
Don't do it.
Don't listen to anything. If you hear Jay Brown say anything, just like disregard it tonight.
It was from his post, by
anything.
The way.
He said anything.
Can we get off topic for half a second? I know Matt's going to kill me on
can
this.
Can we get real?
Let's get real.
I was given an interview the other day, and I go through a standard battery of questions.
You were given, or
did you give an assault?
I was.
Did you give an assault of questions, or just a battery of questions?
Battery questions.
A pepper of questions.
And slap them around.
Peppa.
So, if I asked you what a MAC address is, what would you answer?
That's where you go to get McDonald's, right?
Unique physical identifier.
Half my favorite recipe, mac and cheese.
Unique physical identifier.
Right? So your media access controller is kind of what you're typically looking for, right? Mm-hmm. Nope, this guy came back with One Infinity Loop, Cucamonga, California, or whatever it is, which is the address for Apple.
Wow.
Are you serious?
Now, was he serious, or are you giving points for
sitting there stupefied.
For being creative?
How do you give any points
serious,
for that?
As far as I can tell.
That would be like somebody calling
in-person
a Nick
interview?
Card a Nick card.
In-person interview.
So he wasn't like looking things up and just...
Nope, and I'm like, you're a Mac user, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. Just went off on a
Steve Jobs birthday.
And I'm like,
4/22/68.
Next.
Whatever.
All right. So
did you give him the job?
So let's talk about markets for a second. I think Mike had a good idea here.
Go ahead, Market.
Let's talk about markets for a second. Mm-hmm. So let's go
300 years back in time.
Yeah. So let's restate that. Let's restate that. Okay. So Zach actually started talking about that in the last segment a little bit, just about this idea of intrinsic value and
lack thereof.
Oh yeah, and or lack thereof, and the fact that we're moving away from paper money. So Mike, tee it up, man. What do you want to talk about?
Idea, by the way. Go back 300 years in time, like when saffron was worth its weight in gold.
Or
I mean, they were mad about saffron.
There were cultures that used seashells that were valuable and rare.
Because they were hard to find.
They call me mellow yellow.
Or beaver skins here in Michigan, right?
Right.
Beaver skins were worth.
But why were those shells valuable?
They were rare.
Hard to find.
Yeah. They might have been pretty. Somebody thought they were worth that value based on the parents or whatever.
Okay. Like, so there's effort that went into finding those things, albeit
energy.
They
so energy
things.
Or time.
Okay.
Pearls.
Time, energy.
And then same thing with like gold and silver, right? It takes time, energy
Even
to
harder.
Find it. They're rare. People value them because they have value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I was
the rarity,
trying to
the
get
scarcity
at. The scarcity
of it drives up value.
Scarcity, exactly.
As well as the effort going into finding those things.
So it's not just scarcity alone, right? If I come out with my own set of playing cards, and there's only 10 of these playing cards on the planet, just because there's only 10 of them on the planet doesn't mean people want to spend $20,000 on them, right?
Unless you have people that buy into it and believe it, right? So like you have a community that says these are valuable.
What if those cards are made out of shells?
They call that a cult?
I'm getting talking about religion right now.
Is that called a cult?
That's a great point you bring up about it took some energy to get there, right? And so that's why as imperfect as a system as it is, as energy wasting of a system you could say it is, that's why they put this mining system into place. That's why they said you have to burn this much electricity.
Who's they?
So Satoshi Nakamoto is...
I know him. Everybody knows him.
Right? Everybody knows him. Right.
Well,
so,
well, I Toshiba, know of him, but I don't know
call him.
Call him
Captain T.
Do you know him?
Toshiba Yoshi... so Satoshi Nakamoto is the anonymous creator of... Or some people say they
anonymous,
are Satoshi.
Do you know?
So some people say... So he published a white paper, you know, way back when that said, hey,
someone using that name
here's this thing I made. You guys should check it out.
What is the double spending problem?
Don't let them get you off target.
Okay.
Stay with
that's
your
not a target. What's
so the double spending? So the double spending problem is what Satoshi and whether Satoshi is one group of individuals, whether he's one person, it doesn't really matter because the code is open source, right? So the double spending problem is the idea that hey, we couldn't really the internet gave us an awesome way to copy assets. It gave a great way for or not assets, but it gave me information. Gave me a great way to move information from me to you, and we both had that information. But the blockchain gives us a great way to move that data, so I can verify the authenticity that now only you have that thing, right?
Okay. So to go back to Mike's example with the shells, we had to be in close proximity with each other, right? Because it was 300 some odd years ago. Now, the only thing that's changed is the internet allows us to exchange those shells remotely. But how do I know the shell you're giving me is the shell I want? So the encryption
and the blockchain
and everything cover that exchange.
Right.
Okay, so I'm just trying to continue with the analogy
because
this is working for me, guys.
Oh, yeah, it helps.
So far, this is working out.
It helps. And that's why I'm
keeping it simple.
The shells.
That's why I purposely didn't want to get way into the these complex ideas and this is how this works and this is how this works.
Mr. Roboto.
So now in Bitcoin land, we've been told that there are only, and I'll make the numbers easy, 1,000 of these shells, period, on the planet.
Okay.
And now we have to go out and find them. And once we find the 1,000th shell, that's it.
It's like playing Pokemon.
I was going to say Pokemon.
So the closer we get to finding that 1,000th shell, it changes the value of the shells as we go along, correct?
Right.
Is the analogy
still harder to find?
No?
It gets harder to find
them really?
As they get more and more rare. Sure.
Again, that's
I'm oversimplifying it. I get
speculative
it.
In that,
it's
you know,
not a scavenger hunt.
You're assuming that the amount of power that people are using to mine these is in some way affecting the value. And it could for certain individuals. But again, if we go back to last segment where we were talking about like the Russian mills or whatever, they're selling these ASICs boxes. They're putting 20 on the shelf to the one that they sold you. They're using the rest of the money to pay their power bill. So they're literally just taking the money from you. They're not using their bitcoins. They're not converting those over into money to pay their power bill. They're just using the rest of the money that you gave them.
Stockpiling all the
bitcoins. Talk to us about that, Zachary.
Okay.
So... you mentioned when it comes to the Russian mining, you mentioned a 51% attack, and it's important to understand what the 51% attack is because it sounds very scary. So the 51% attack in a proof of stake system, which is Bitcoin and the vast majority of cryptocurrencies out today, is a situation where the hash power of the network, you have one individual or one control group of individuals has greater than 51% of the computing power across the global network, and then they can make what we call a invalid transaction. So that would be how you get Overstock.com to sell you a whole lot of free furniture, right? So, but the thought behind this is it was purposely designed and built in a way where if you had the billions of dollars in computing power it would take to create a 51% attack, you'd probably be more profitable just mining it, but you'd probably be more profitable just doing what the system was designed to do because you have to fight an entire global network. Go ahead, Jason.
That global network could be 10 people, though. So it's the idea of the number is speculative again. And that's you notice a recurring theme here, right? Speculative on all the different little pieces that we keep talking about.
Lots of risk.
Mm-hmm.
Lots
so
of personal
you gotta,
responsibility.
You got to take the number of people that are actually doing this in the open network and figure out how many it would take. And then you actually have to be wanting to do that. So if you are hypothetically in possession of enough computing power to be that 51%, whether it's combined, you know, Russia house with China house with North Korea house or whatever, if they all got together, they could certainly do it. And what you're really talking about there, what he didn't really touch on is that the idea there is that if you get enough people or enough computers to say change line X in the ledger to say this, then you've just, you know, injected a falsehood that will be assumed as reality.
Virtual inflation.
So is this sort of the next step in botnets?
It's really hard to say. I mean, you know, you're seeing botnets pop up everywhere. You're seeing all kinds of people who are now being a part of this open network unintentionally. You're seeing JavaScripts that when you go to a website, mm-hmm. it starts using your browser and your computer right. to mine with. Some of these are so forward thinking that they're actually downloading that little piece and will continue to run after you leave the website. So you're now unintentionally Bitcoin mining or Ethereum or whatever it happens to be for the person who put that script out there. Cell phone attacks. They just found a massive botnet for Android devices that was Bitcoin mining. Same thing has happened on, if memory serves me right, on the Apple devices. So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you're adding more compute power against the possibility of that 51%
yeah.
actually happening because these attackers are getting very crafty with the way that they're distributing their power. Mm.
This is a great way to segue, that's a technology. Segwit? That's a Bitcoin technology. This is a great way to segue into mining. So... With those ASIC boxes, so okay, let me go back farther. So you're solving computational hashes. You get your reward. Bitcoin's introduced. Yay! So what people found along the way, and this is how those ASIC boxes came along. They say, hey, why do this with your CPU when I could make a special piece of hardware that could do it way faster for way less cost for way less electricity? Right? It's just people finding efficiencies gaming the system. And they created these ASIC boxes, right? So now Bitcoin has these ASIC boxes. Well, a lot of what Bitcoin was the first, but that does not make it the best. That does not make it the king. It just gives it the brand recognition, right? So there's a ton of other cryptocurrencies out there. A lot of whom are gaining ground on Bitcoin that say, hey, let's create an album or let's create an algorithm that instead of being exploited by ASIC boxes, and exploited might be the right term, but you guys get what I'm saying. Let's create an algorithm specifically for hardware that the everyday guy can use, like a graphics processing unit, even hard drive space in some cryptos, CPUs. So you see people specifically designing algorithms that are getting back to those pieces of hardware, and that's a purposeful move so that you don't get the huge centralization. You don't get one giant farm that has all of those things because there's guys like me running little rigs in their basement with their gaming hardware. So it kind of keeps it a little bit more decentralized. And you'll see that theme all through this space. As people keep throwing around decentralized like it's the golden everything. Like it's the decentralization, like it's the golden everything.
So for some of our listeners that might not be familiar with Bitcoin, I have some stats regarding how energy intensive Bitcoin mining is. So for a whole year for Bitcoin mining or, you know, doing the blockchain, it took 24 terawatt hours, which is equal to the amount of energy that the country of Nigeria used in a year. And this comes out to an average of 215 kilowatt hours per week. And that's about the size of an average family household, what they use in a week. Wow. So about 900 kilowatt hours a month.
And you can expect
what are these statistics? All the effort that's going into.
Yeah, this is from November of this year. So just published
this is in one month?
No, this is for the whole year. So 24 terawatt hours a year.
You could be expected to produce how many Bitcoins for that level of effort?
This article doesn't say.
Did they say?
So it says that, let's see.
One. It's like a grow house, right?
Let's the bigger question is how many time jumps can you do with the DeLorean with that much power?
Yeah. Depends on how much runway you have. 1.21
gigawatts.
Dan's house is going to get raided by the DEA because they're thinking he's growing marijuana. No, right. I'm just mining Bitcoin.
Right. And then they'll see your house from outer space,
and
Mr. Gregory.
The last, the last point is that at any time in this world, all the Bitcoin miners, they're using the same amount of electricity as 2.3 million American homes.
Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
it's ridiculous.
It's right. It's a source of global warming at this point.
It is a waste. And these are very, very new technologies, right? Jeez. And to say that it can't get better is kind of silly because you already see technologies that like segregated witness, it's short for SegWit, that are happening on the Bitcoin network.
Segregated witness is short for... What?
SegWit. SegWit is short for segregated witness. I'm just using it as an example. It is upgrades that are happening to Bitcoin that are making it faster, that are making it better, that are making it more efficient. And I mean, again, this is really new technology, but to say that it can't get better, I disagree.
So why not use that all this computing power for something more than just doing that and reward you? For instance, if you were trying to break down a giant database for gravitational pull of some foreign planet, why not come out and say, well, I'll use that power for that, and then when you help me complete my task, or you're breaking down giant databases
or something
like that.
Hack into a country, government, or...
One of the coolest projects that's been around for a long time that really used this kind of power was the Folding at Home project, so protein folding. So you could donate the power from your computer when it's idle to fold proteins to cure all kinds of things.
About like Alzheimer's. Human genome type projects as well, that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's cool.
You don't think SETI actually found intelligent life?
I don't know if they did.
Hey, Dave, back to your question.
Here. That's
wasn't
sure.
here, yeah.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
Back to Dave's question about how much it costs to mine one Bitcoin. Here in Michigan, at whatever electrical rate they use, it's $5,000 here in Michigan. If you go to Florida, it's about $3,900. Texas, it's $3,600 per Bitcoin.
How about Colorado?
So that doesn't include your rig,
Colorado's $4,100. Right? Correct.
That's just the power.
The power payoff time. Yeah.
Okay. So California is 6,200.
So, to say that a proof-of-stake system won't get better is and it's expected to keep increasing. Like, it's important to remember, we already have a global network that is already powerful enough to handle transactions. To say that it won't get better is kind of like telling a pregnant woman, "Hey, your baby is growing at
those
at
genes
the rate,
do make you look fat."
At the rate your baby, you're 3 months pregnant. At the rate your baby is growing, in 5 years, it's going to be the size of this room, right? So it doesn't take a lot of things into account. Like, for example, we said we've got a controlled supply. We've got 21 million of these things that are ever going to happen. We can only speculate at this point, but I'd be really interested to see what would happen when that 21 millionth ish coin gets mined, and see what happens to that power usage, because now miners are only making profits off handling transactions on the network. They're not worried about making new coins.
So wait a minute, if we're using this much, I'm going to steal these guys' thunder, the tin hat guys. Why wouldn't power companies be inflating the cost of Bitcoin? Right. If it costs you $5,000 of electricity, why wouldn't DTE be going, you know, instead of investing in a power grid, I'm going to buy a buttload of Bitcoin and drive up
the
cost?
That's the thing. It for many cryptos,
but they're going to make money anyhow. A technical term, it's going to take buttload energy to get to that point. So, I mean, it's a win-win for them no matter what.
A lot of times people are stealing the power.
Right,
that's in the first place.
Subsidized electricity in many countries.
You see any number of different. Hell, I saw a biometric solar Bitcoin farm the other day where they were plugging people in like in the Matrix. It's not even a joke.
Wow.
They had a bunch of people lined up on a table and they were using them to power their Bitcoin rig. It's not a joke.
You look it on like a stationary bike? Or like,
no, they're laying on a table and they've
the
got
heat
them
from
hooked
their body.
Up.
Yeah.
So rewind that.
You're
back.
Not going to have great hash rates doing
well,
that.
Probably not. But
it's worth
however, in China, they probably do have the bike farm going.
The idea there is that, to your point, what's going to happen at the end of this?
Right.
You know,
very speculative.
It's really hard to say. Does another currency pop up and take Bitcoin's place? Do we continue to see the variety of different hard forks that we've come into to contact with specifically with Bitcoin and time, which a hard fork for those of you that are not aware, you can see a whole crash of a currency when they decide to fork it off and do the things that he was just talking about. So, for example, there's been large theft of different types of currencies, and they've talked about creating a fork to get those back, to say, you know, we want to stop what we're doing. We want to fork this project off to get that theft back in our hands. Well, when that happens, it causes, you know, the currency's value to kind of crash. Mm. So, you know, could those types of things happen in between here and there? Again, speculating. But at the end of the day, I think you may have flipped what you were saying around earlier. I'm not sure. But when there's no power being used to actually, or sorry, when there's no lottery to win a Bitcoin for mining
incentive,
why would people continue to do it?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know? So I think the system was built in a way that if adoption rates continue, again, 100% speculative, but if these things get to a certain price, and I'm just saying things because I'm trying to represent a variety of different cryptos. if their price is high enough, it will still be profitable to handle those transactions and take. So how miners handle transactions is, Dan, if I want to send you a Bitcoin, I say, hey, scan my QR code, which is my wallet address. Send me a Bitcoin, right? You scan my wallet address from your mobile phone, whatever, wherever you have your wallet stored. You send me a Bitcoin. What happens is that Bitcoin doesn't go directly from you to me. It goes through miners on the. It does go from you to me, but it gets.
They're running it through the blockchain, aren't they? Verify that it's an authentic Bitcoin. Miners, and that Dan actually owns that Bitcoin and that he has the right to transfer it to you.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. So,
and that's recorded miners in will the take. Public ledger.
Correct.
Miners will take tiny fees of the Bitcoin you just sent me. Six confirmations on six confirmations on Bitcoin. And then
prove the authenticity.
And then they say, all right, six confirmations, that's enough. Let's add that to the blockchain. So that is forever in the ledger. So and talking about the ledger, it's important to get into what forks are for a quick moment, just so people are understanding, well, what's a hard fork? So you've got a running list of transactions, right? That's on the blockchain. That's going and going and going, right? Somebody says, hey, We want to make a change to the code. We think we can do it better. We think et cetera, X, Y, and Z. We want to get theft back. What Jason was mentioning those transactions are happening on the day that they create what would be a hard fork. They say, oh, new transaction forks off of that. The first transaction happens, and now you've got separate blockchains that are running, right? And I'm using my hands in parallel. You've got separate blockchain. You've got separate transactions that are happening,
which is important because it's good for radio.
Yeah, my hand motions are great on the radio.
It looks like he's trying to help me.
I have a ton of them. Right.
And although he has an angelic voice, he's got a face for radio.
Built for this business, Zach.
Thanks. Great. And then a soft fork is where we decide, where the network decides based on their, based on nodes, based on hash rate, it's a variety of different things based on the currency. They decide, hey, we're all going to vote on, we like this little code change to happen. And then bang, it happens, and it can stay on the same transaction thread. So that's what we call a soft fork. And it's what is really notable is Bitcoin had one of those successful soft forks a few months ago.
It's like a stock splitting, kind of,
but it doesn't change the number of Bitcoins in existence.
It could, right?
Yeah.
Wait. I thought that was finite.
What? You could change it through a voluntary code change on the network. Burning down the forest, more trees grow. You could change those numbers.
Shut up.
What he's referencing is that they could change the number of theoreticals that could possibly.
Yeah, it's all code, so you could change anything, right?
So essentially, they can make the block bigger.
Okay, got it.
Well,
they could change anything.
There's a bunch of other things though that people are adding by forks,
but the price drops that. As
like
that
what?
Anomaly.
Like
had.
What? Give us another example.
No, SegWit went way higher when it was launched on Litecoin and Bitcoin. So
yeah.
Sorry, Dave.
So it's important to note that it's important to note that Bitcoin actually had a successful soft fork. It's had plenty of hard forks, but it doesn't take anybody to say, "Hey, I have a new idea. I'm gonna copy the code that's in Bitcoin because it's open source and launch their own little thing." It's a big deal for everyone on the network to come to an agreement and say, hey, let's do this code change. So SegWit is a SegWit was pushed a couple months ago, and it's a what we call a voluntary fork. Okay. Where if I want to have a SegWit enabled wallet that is, long story short, going to make transactions much faster, lower fees, etc., I can decide to do that. I can decide to do that. Fees are now smaller, transaction or confirmation times are shorter, etc.
So conceivably you could start your own cryptocurrency today, and what's stopping you from doing that? Why don't you do that?
It doesn't seem like a great idea to me. It doesn't seem profitable. I don't have the marketing to back it or whatnot. Okay. So the fact that it is a big deal, because these types of soft forks have never happened. We've talked about them, but they've never happened. So it proves that Bitcoin could get better in the future. It could get more energy efficient. It could get faster, better, etc. So those are hard forks and soft forks.
Until the feds steal them all.
A quick rewind.
Until the feds steal them all. Until the IRS says, nope, you can't own that.
What if we have a quick
young man in the back
rewind
Todd.
Here? So again, this segment is about data mining. Jason had mentioned a couple of things, I guess, and even Michael had a good, we're talking about why would somebody do this? What are the things that are needed? We're talking about power consumption. So again, if we said one Bitcoin is $18,550, and the graph that you had sent shows here's how much electricity it would take for you to do that. You would also then need a rig. So there's a number of things. There are certain people that are just being those miners. I guess, what do you think they do as far as, are they making a lot of money just at that, at doing that function? And what would it take to get yourself, Dan all of a sudden wants to jump in, right?
Yeah.
He's all on board. What would he have to do to get to that point? And then how much would you see are people making on an average basis as a Bitcoin data miner?
Just real quick, I started looking at Bitcoin back in 2012 with a few friends of mine.
Ooh.
And this was just the beginning. Then Dave and I started talking about it. But it was at that point where Bitcoin for the homeowner
Mike told me, he's like, you should probably take like 10 grand and throw it in here. 2013.
Really?
True story.
Your Forrest Gump moment. No,
but Bitcoin was at that point where it was really hard for the home user to start mining because you just couldn't compete with these places in China and Russia that had, you know, cheaper energy and more computing power.
It would take forever to get payback on your hardware.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
And that was why I decided not to enter in terms of mining it myself because there's no way that I'd get my money back.
Now, when you say hardware or software, I know you mentioned ASICs and other, you know.
Or just getting on the GPU heavy laden machine or setup.
So build your rig, Jason, like you were saying. What would it take and where would you... I mean, who are you? You said, what if we had we have a group right here in the room? What would it take if we all decide, hey, this is something we're going to pursue?
Well, I mean, it just depends on the amount of, I don't know, do you call it venture capital?
$32.
You got to have an upfront cost, or you got to be malicious as hell, which means you got to write a virus and you got to get it out there in the hands of everybody else and use their computers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
and we have a guy that can write viruses.
So how do we write a virus?
I mean, doing this legitimately, saying, hey, I'm going to use my own power consumption. I'm going to take all of the equipment that we have. I mean, that's not going to get you there. Like just like you see a couple of these articles and you some things that we have, like this nice hash piece that's out here. I mean, we're talking about people that are actually doing nefarious activities to then kind of gain that footprint to get themselves going.
Stealing them off of other people's rigs, that's a good way to do it. But,
right.
You know, the hardware that you need today, you know, for example, I've got a motherboard that will hold 19 video cards. GPUs run a heck of a lot faster than a CPU does. Why do I even have this motherboard? Well, it's not for Bitcoin mining. I like to crack passwords. You guys know me. I'm all about security. Right. And if I was a betting man, I bet you today, if I filled out all 19 of those slots with high-end video cards, I could probably sell time on that rig for people who want to crack passwords or have me crack passwords and make as much as a Bitcoin pretty quick. So specifically, if we were talking about just doing audits of somebody's domain controller, or if you know, there's other pen testing companies out there that don't have that rig and they want to do some time shared on that, you can do it in AWS today.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating.
But just off the top of your head, would you say the amount of money earned per energy usage would be much more effective on your end versus doing the Bitcoin route?
Oh, by far. By far, absolutely. Why? Well, I know how to crack passwords.
Yeah.
You know,
you've got the reputation.
The only thing that is really a hindrance to me is the user on the other end. And, you know, they're notorious for being flawed in their password creation. So
Jason has a superpower, everybody. It's cracking your passwords.
Yeah, well, so Bitcoin, Bitcoin mining at this point probably isn't the best use of money for a homeowner or just a small town.
But I think we're just talking about Bitcoin. With all these other emerging different cryptocurrencies, I can assume that some are much easier to process and get value out of. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, how do you weigh that? I mean, Zach, you said you're mining. What type of crypto are you mining? And let's talk about that process, how you selected it and what you're using.
Right. So I'm mining a cryptocurrency called Ethereum. And Ethereum, in terms of market capitalization, is the second top to Bitcoin. And we could get into a million different reasons on why, you know, why I might think it's better or why some people think it's better. But in 10 seconds, the difference between Ethereum and Bitcoin is Bitcoin aims to be nothing more than a digital cash or digital gold, where Ethereum is trying to be a decentralized marketplace for applications. So applications that run themselves and are publicly verifiable that they're doing what they say they're doing, right? So, and again, we could get into that for, you know, as long as we want, but I'm Ethereum started this year at $7.98. It's now trading over $800. And how one would decide to...
Trading where and how?
Trading on the various exchanges.
Coinbase is the easiest one to use, but it only trades Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Ethereum.
Right. And they plan to add... They say they're going to add a couple more. But yeah, Coinbase is probably the... Probably the biggest one in America.
It's most accessible in America.
Sure. Okay.
So can you go over like how much you put into your startup costs and
sure, yeah.
like what you've been able to get out of it so far?
Before you – well, actually, just put a pin in it. I want to talk to you about the whole exchange, but go ahead.
So, yeah. So a lot of people already have hardware that's perfectly capable of mining Ethereum profitably. Thank you.
Segment two, you're allowed to make up words.
Yeah. You'll hear
it a lot. That was segment two? I always think that's three.
You'll hear a lot of words. I think he made it five syllables is all.
Segment three for you. Half of
those,
for me.
Half of those technologies I named, I made them all up. A lot of people already have that hardware. So there's plenty of PC gamers out there that already have these GPUs, we're calling them.
People have computers?
Yeah. A GPU is called a graphics processing unit, and it's a special piece of hardware that can handle graphically intensive things a lot better than a CPU can.
Math.
And that's just based on the architecture of the chip, right?
Yes. And the task that it's trying to do, right, which is... whether it's cracking hashes, cracking passwords if you're Jason, mining Ethereum, or running PUBG at 60 frames a second. PUBG is a computer game. These things are better for that than a normal CPU. So what you would do in that instance is let's take my graphics card, for example. I don't have a giant... motherboard like Jason says that he, you know, wow, can handle 9
slots. I was wondering where that was going.
I have
Jason's motherboard is round.
I'm running a small little gaming rig I made myself out of
small.
No, it is a little rig I made out of a Dell that I got from an old job.
It's a little rig.
And that cute. I added a graphics card to that. Downloaded an open source Ethereum miner, made a Ethereum wallet, created a tiny little batch file that says, "Hey, I want to do this thing, and I want to run this program, and I want to work with this mining pool." And a mining pool is
how much time involved in money would you say was involved to get you to this point that you've put in?
You can start mining in about 8 minutes if you have the hardware and it's already built. So if you already have a gaming PC or something you're using, you can do it in about 8 minutes. The hardware costs, so you've got
gaming PC, you're talking $1,000, $1,500.
Let's say $500, $600 for a mid-level gaming PC, because it's important to note that the Ethereum, for example, is extremely GPU dependent. It doesn't care what your processor is, it doesn't care what your RAM is. So you could really build a rig for the cost of a graphics card plus a Raspberry Pi.
I was going to say, that's what I was doing with Raspberry Pi.
Right.
Thinking.
Yeah, okay. And that would be even more efficient on, you know, all of the other hardware points.
Can you hack like an Xbox or a PS4 to do this?
You know, I don't know. I've never looked into that. Matt's thinking, hey, I'm going to go home and get this going tonight. So,
how about a VIC-20?
Matt's going to throw a bunch of rigs inside an arcade game. Marvin's Marvelous
there
Museum.
There you go.
Atari 2600.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, so let's take a easily accessible consumer bought graphics card. But this is one that I have, so we're just going to use that for ease of use. That's an AMD R9 390. That's the graphics card. They're trading on eBay for about, I think I checked, they're about $230, right?
This is why my NVIDIA stock is going through the roof.
Yeah, in fact, in the last year, the prices of graphics cards have been inflating.
Crazy.
Yeah, they have been inflating.
Right. You go to Micro Center, they've got labels on all their video cards that say, you know, one for this amount, two for twice the amount, and if you want three, the third one's $10,000.
Wow.
Like, that's not a joke. Those are like, that's stamped on every...
Yeah. Wow. And it's simply because this stuff is profitable, people are going out and mining this in their house. So with one R9 390, okay,
Again, that's up for debate.
Speculative.
I'll get into the profitability. So
that's where I was kind of asking. I mean, yep. That's why I asked those initial questions: is time and effort put in, and you're looking at power consumption. So I'm trying to, you know, put in all the math together to say, okay, yep.
Yeah, lots of people buy
lotto tickets.
That's kind of where I'm wondering. So, I mean, what are your chances of being successful? Right. I mean, just like watch people going out gold mining. All right, I got this land. How do you know there's gold in the ground? And how do I know I can get it out?
So you're asking, are you still at the early end of this, or is this kind of the top? And is it too late to get into it and help mining kind of?
I'm thinking there's a large audience that we're talking to today, right? Yeah. And is somebody sitting there thinking like, hey, like Matt and Dave just said, hey, I'm going to go and take my Xbox. And I'm
let's
start.
Use, for the sake of this discussion, let's use real numbers. Let's use what Ether.
Let's use your numbers.
Let's use what Ethereum is trading at right now. Let's use what my DTE power cost is, right? Let's just for the sake of profitability equations, let's do that. So with a one R9 390, go ahead, Jason.
First off, what's your address? I'm gonna look it up on DTE.
No.
Just use podcast Detroit's electricity.
He passed.
So with one R9 390, you can look up the power usage of an R9 390. It runs at TDP, which is
the throughput.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's hot electricity usage. It runs about 275 watts. Throw on 50 more watts ish for a Windows computer, or a whole lot less for a Raspberry Pi, and you're looking what I have, and I monitor this with a little smart outlet I bought for $16 on Amazon. I'm running at 330 watts constantly, right? With my R9 390 running constantly, except for when I'm gaming. So I turn it off when I'm gaming, turn it back on. Don't get much time to game right now. So it runs pretty much constantly. I'm running about 27 what we call mega hashes a second. That is outputting me just over 0.12 Ethereum a month, right? So 0.12 Ethereum would currently be worth $92, right? But what's my power cost, right? So it runs out to be about $20 to $30 power cost a month, and you can put these in online calculators based on the current Ethereum network mining difficulty rate. And
you
all
said
that
you're running 29 mega hashes a second. What does that
27.
Mean? 27. What does that mean?
So that is the rate at which I'm solving these computational hashes. That is the rate that I'm handling transactions on the Ethereum network and taking tiny, tiny little fees for. So what we're looking at is $20 to $30 in power costs, and I'm bringing in with one graphics card $92. So you do the math. I'm looking at about $50 profit on one graphics card. And
keep in mind for those, what period of time?
Per month.
Right now. And keep in mind that the price of Ethereum
but
keeps
increasing.
But if
you get four more friends and they get four more friends.
And you have them use my referral link.
Have you ever heard of Quickstar? Amway?
Amway.
So
I'd like to tell you about a business that'll make you able to work from home 20 hours a week.
Return on investment is obviously going to be your next question, right? So if he's got, you know, X amount into a video card, and he's got X amount into his build out, and then he's got power consumption, you have to front all that up front. So that means just like a regular business, you've got to then, you know, work to get your return on investment. He's not even talking yet about the fact that the feds are now just hammering everybody for taxes that they believe that they're owed. So, you know, you've got that coming up as a conversational topic as well at the end of the year, right?
I like where you were going, Jason. I mean, I think to be successful, you have to be nefarious. I mean, when you're looking at this, if you're offsetting some of this,
I'd like to think that.
I mean, of course, that's not what we promote or, you know, really push. But I mean, it seems like
Jackson early.
Why you got to be the Grinch, man? You're like, you just stole Christmas from Zach.
Payback time. Payback time was mentioned, and that's really important. So I mentioned the cost of eBay.
Zach's got a grow house.
The cost on eBay of a R9 390, and I did mention that in dollars, not one of these cryptos that fluctuates 10% a day or more. So at that current rate with a $52 profit a month on my current DTE, you're looking at about 4.5 months till that is free hardware.
So you paid how much for that card again?
That card on eBay right now goes for $230.
Okay, $230. Okay, so you're gonna.
At which point you got to buy into his enthusiasm though, and say, if I had two cards, if I had three cards, if I bought five lotto tickets, if I bought 100 lotto tickets.
You do understand that I just went to Amazon and spent a whole bunch of money, Zach. How much would you charge me to set this up in my house?
You're gonna need a generator.
Free. I'll come over.
Normally he's gonna register a domain.
Right.
So yeah, no, that's on.
To Todd's point, I mean, we keep talking about the ASICs, which is just application specific integrated circuits, right? So these, that's
the same stuff they use in firewalls, right?
Where my brain's going is, yeah, we got some SSL appliances at home.
It's a purpose-built hardware.
Yeah, so we're saying that, you know, you have to be nefarious. So even the good guys, if you want to call them that, in this scenario, these manufacturers of the parts that allow you to do the mining are actually the bad guys, because they're fighting against you to win the lotto ticket, you know, to win the lotto.
Right.
So at the end of the day, there's no real, you know, there's no real winners in this. Maybe the guy that lost his bitcoins at the bottom of the trash dump, but he's never going to get those back.
So yeah, but
can you make more money by
with Ethereum though? Is that there's a limited amount of applications, kind of what I was saying earlier, that they're trying to accomplish a task. And mm-hmm. so you're using that computing, and I'm assuming that in this marketplace, they don't just allow any application to dump in there. Or is it just open market if you want
to? It's decentralized. So anyone can say, hey, I made a decentralized application. Check it out. Use it if you want.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
North Korea. Hey, we need you to figure out how to make our rockets better. Well, it's now.
So I have the choice to run that application or not, right? I have the choice to decide.
Well, if you assume
hey,
that
like
the person
app.
Telling you what the app does, because we all know that every app on our phone doesn't do exactly what it says.
Right. I read all of the open source applications I use.
Sure, who doesn't?
I've read every EULA for every piece of software.
I read the source code for Facebook before I downloaded it. No, I didn't do that. But yeah, so you there are plenty of apps coming online to the – oh, go ahead, Matt.
So what are the legal repercussions if you – opt into this open app, and it turns out that let's hypothetically, someone like North Korea is using your computer,
unbeknownst to you, of course.
Well, no, because you had to opt in to this application,
right?
And you said, "Hey, yeah, I want to help rockets go higher, faster, and further." You didn't do your due diligence, and you get into this. You're actually helping a terrorist organization or something like that complete a task.
Whoa.
But that's not limited just to cryptocurrencies. That could be for
right. Well, no, right.
Just talking about, you just described Napster. So, I mean, that's true.
You did.
So, at the end of the day, you're talking about peer-to-peer networks, and you're talking about whatever this application is, what kind of data it actually shares. Tor Network, right? Tor Network was invented by our government, the United States government, and because our government doesn't talk to the other agencies within the government, we actually have, you know, FBI, CIA trying to break the Tor network. They're trying
so
to
rude.
You know, yeah, so you know, at yeah. the end of the day, you're just talking about peer-to-peer networks, and you're liable, if you will, in court, according to historic, you know, facts, I guess, right, that they can hold you responsible for something you participated in.
Yep. So how does, and then obviously with net neutrality coming out, is there any trade
that'll kill Bitcoin?
Yeah, it won't
right
matter.
There.
They're not going to let us do any of that.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm assuming that
conversation
most of the,
moot.
There's actually well, not necessarily. So on the current network, yeah, ISPs could decide, yeah, let's shut this Bitcoin thing down. However, there's actually already,
and they now have the power to.
There's already some apps on the Ethereum network that are working on a decentralized internet, like a decentralized DNS, if you will, or there's systems where you'll create a decentralized giant mesh network where if you host a mesh node, you get a payout in this tiny little mesh coin. So there are actually some interesting ways that people are trying to use blockchain to get around what could be, you know, the repercussions of the negative repercussions of net neutrality. Title II disappearing, and you guys probably talked about that recently. Okay, so we're going to assume most viewers know what's going on with Title II and that jazz.
I like to call it Tidal Wave.
Tidal Wave, right? Goodbye.
Yeah, and they're actually already having their little pets.com problem with pets.eth, which is Ethereum-based domains, and these are domains that new type of DNS. So everybody's buying up their own little domains, and we're already going to have the problems we had right before.
He's notorious for
Nike.eth
squatter.
So if ISPs decided nobody gets to these things, nobody gets to these websites, it's already it's already a problem.
So that means that the value would then go down, right? I mean, I guess that's what we're
speculation,
saying.
But probably
the market drop out of some of these if.
Right. It's speculation.
Do we have
it's
time to
stuff.
Talk about some of the disadvantages on this segment, or should we wait to do
it? No, we're going to run this whole segment out.
Yep, we're going to run this out.
So should we go over some of the disadvantages
Zach, you'll have
of
to come back.
Cryptocurrencies?
This conversation was so terrible, you'll have to come back again. Yeah. No, seriously.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're gonna run the segment through to the end here. I think
he's gonna come back all fancy with the bow tie and top hat.
Yeah,
like, I'm rich.
We'd really appreciate if you dress the part next time, please.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mikey.
If you don't have much money to put in, you can't make much. I mean, 1,000% gains on $10 still isn't much.
No,
but it's still gains.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that, because honestly, like Mike said earlier, since 2013, I've been messing around thinking, I don't know, should I, like, can I try doing some of this or whatever?
Think about this. If you had 30 Bitcoins in your possession today, 30,
yep.
Wow. And you sold them at today's market price, you could, like he was talking about with the domains, you could just go buy your own TLD. You could have
.dave. .dave, yeah.
Right, .dave.
Yeah.
I would buy a .betsky.
Me too.
I'd buy into that.
Yeah. .mom, that stay away from .mom, by the way. I'm not sure if you guys saw that, but that is the most spam riddled.
Oh, no.
I don't know why. Who was really? The evil person? But we do these some of these studies.
It's very evil.
And the top 10 worst TLDs, normally .mom is always in that top 10.
Top really? Site, top, yeah.
Mom, so if you're ever getting redirected to a .mom site, it's normally bad, unfortunately.
We gotta get security jabber .mom.
Get the dot info.
Just registered.
I got a great one.
Or a listener does. Hurry up!
It's amazing.
I'll grab security jabber.
So Mike had a good.
Now.
You know, he was advantages, disadvantages. Is I mean, I guess Zach, we're not joining your cult yet.
That's
no offense
fine.
To call it a cult, but I mean, like we were joking around saying you've got to get certain people, like the shell analogy, right? And you got to get certain people to buy into that this is something that we find that's rare. It's an interesting concept, but like you say, I mean, there has to be that level of participation. Jason,
I think they're different
about,
though, because if you look at Bitcoin, it's the shell analogy. When you look at Ethereum, it's like who's going to go find those shells? Like there's actual. Tasks would be complete. I mean,
you could be the
300-year analogy would be, you know,
that's what makes Ethereum very
the guy that makes the jury out of the shells would be Ethereum.
That's
right?
Yeah, and so that's what makes Ethereum really interesting, because we don't even know what ideas people could come up with for Ethereum, right? Because they're not written yet.
Something we would talk about advantages, disadvantages of cryptocurrency as a whole, not necessarily saying, you know, Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, are
so
you better
blockchain
off?
Or cryptocurrencies? Because that is a little bit of a different discussion. Let's say cryptocurrencies for the sake of the discussion.
So I think one disadvantage that I see as a person that's not actively involved with it is as a currency, the fluctuations would just kill me if I was getting paid in Bitcoin or Ethereum, right?
Right?
I mean, it would be great if I got that 10% gain on the next day, but it would stink
if
it dropped 15%.
If it dropped 30%, yeah, which is totally possible.
Day traders would
happens.
Be jumping off buildings.
Oh, yeah.
So, right. So right now, I think it's a great, for people that want to speculate and they see this high and they think they can jump in and still ride this out to, you know, 15, 20, 30% gains, it's probably great for them. But for somebody that's looking for an actual currency to, you know,
right. So,
buy groceries or buy clothing, that... Right now, it's not at that point.
Right. So based on adoption rate, in theory, all speculation, right? In theory, if more and more and more and more and more and more people started using this, one big move wouldn't rock the supply and demand as much, right? So you would see much more stabilization.
A little too volatile for me right now.
Yeah, but we're
not. I don't own a boat.
But we're not there yet. What I recommend people do is take
move into a tiny house.
The DeVos family has this exact same.
What I recommend people do.
Sales, by the way.
Yeah.
What I recommend people do is do not put a penny more into it, then you are totally fine kissing goodbye, right? Because like
that would
like,
be zero.
Like my yeah, well, that's and that's fine. Like Mike's saying, like we can see 30% fluctuations in a day, right? This CBOE exchange futures exchanges started trading, and I believe they normally shut down a commodity if it moves more than like 8% a day. So Bitcoin's going to shut down like 3 times a day, right? So
keep on thinking of trading.
So we're talking about volatility that is just nuts. But
went up.
What was the one on Reddit the other morning? Like, boy asks, is Bitcoin mining dad if you can have a Bitcoin? Dad's like, those are $14,000. What do you need a $15,000 Bitcoin for?
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, they move right. fast.
Within a second.
Right. We do see defined market cycles with Bitcoin, though. And so it will be very interesting. And again, completely speculative, but it will be really interesting to see where we go into 2018, where we go into 2019, you know, how other markets will affect it, you know? So a lot of people say, the Dow has a crazy run up. What's going to happen in 2018? So it's interesting to see if,
so the Dow could crash, but yet still Bitcoin or a lot of the cryptocurrencies could right. still keep their value.
Or, is go, it, or does go, money
or they
go
could go
into
up because
cryptos?
People are looking at, right. you know, so right. if systemic failure in the financial system, so they rush to Bitcoin because they see that right. as a safe haven.
Exactly. Right. Here's a place where I put my money because we know the market's going to correct itself. So I'm going to take some out. And,
very interesting
like,
stuff.
Your gold yeah. kind of conversation.
Right. Everybody yep. I know that was either an early adopter gold, or fanatic about Bitcoins in general as they were coming up, literally every one of them voiced the fact that it was a tax dodge. Every one of them. So,
except me.
I'm not including you in that. I didn't know you, but you know, in
unfortunately,
I can safely say that about every single conversation with a person I ever had that they were looking at it as a tax dodge. They didn't want to give their money to Uncle Sam, mm-hmm. You know, which I despise personally, but. At the end of the day, I think that there's
giving
a huge
tax dollars to Uncle Sam or people that don't want to.
People that don't contribute, yeah.
So Bitcoin's the reason why we have bad infrastructure in the United States.
But
it's why the roads suck.
Yeah. It's Bitcoin's fault.
It's Bitcoin.
So, you know, you take your criminal element, you take your forced, you know, file hostage kind of deal. I love the new one. They're sending out emails now that they've done a little bit of recon on the person they're sending an email to. You know, hi, Tammy Smith. You know, here's a picture of you at this place with all of this information.
Start swatting people for Bitcoin.
I was hired to kill you, and I'm going to do it unless you pay me a Bitcoin. Right. We've received two or three of those at work as, can you look into this for us? So that's a legit
swat
thing
people
right
for
now.
Bitcoins, right? I mean, you're talking about
murdering them.
That's a great perspective
as a
you bring.
Fish.
Perspective you bring because you see that dark side of it. You know, you
so that's
see
another disadvantage of being a cryptocurrency, right? The anonymous aspect of it.
Right. Sure. Yeah. And again, you know,
what are the advantages again? Make a lot of money?
Zach, why are you killing
if you're the feds, you'll make a ton of money. So look at the one right now where the feds arrested the guy, the drug dealer. I think it was in California. He had, what, $500,000 in Bitcoin when they got him last year. His 500,000 is now 80 million or something or 8 million, 8.5 million. Sorry.
And the same thing happened in Romania or Slovakia. They confiscated a couple thousand and now it's like, I want to say like 30% of their like national surpluses in Bitcoin.
How do they get
this guy hasn't
in?
Been tried yet. You know, he
so
hasn't,
the government owns,
he hasn't
owns
had his day in court. They
assets.
Just filed paperwork to sell his seized assets.
The government
seize low, sell
and
high.
He, you know, and it, seize what, would, low, sell high. What would they do if he actually somehow managed to get through his court and win his court
Woo!
Case and win?
No
and
they kidding. Sold,
that's but, not happening.
I guess if someone shanks him in jail, can
yeah. Well, what? Yeah. What? Yeah. What?
You're right. That's
what. What happens if they sell it and it goes up another? It, what happens if John McAfee actually gets to follow through on his bet with himself?
Don't talk about it.
Eat a pound of himself or whatever it is.
Yes, a pound
or
pints a pound the world's around.
Can we go over some more of the so disadvantages?
Guys, yeah,
quick?
Sure.
Now, are there more? It seems like there's more. No offense, right now.
Sure.
And I know Zach. This might hit. It seems like there's more disadvantages to advantages, right?
Sure.
What about the aspect that it's so?
If that's how you want to perceive
it's so dependent on infrastructure, especially the electrical grid. So if you have an EMP or some kind of an attack on infrastructure, so you're not able to access your wallet or your Bitcoin or the blockchain,
devastating.
Right.
If I can't get to my credit card, I can't use that either.
Dude, if there's an
EMP, I can get a new credit card
issue. If there's an EMP,
you can call the credit card company and they've got a backup.
Sure.
Yeah. You guys are all a bunch of haters. Zach, give us the good things. Give us the advantages.
Tell us why you're going to be rich.
Come on, tell us.
You got to believe in your savior, Ethereum Christ, Ethereum Christ.
Sell us.
Give them that purple drink. Give me some of that. I'm going to try. I'm joining the cult. I'm being a smartass, but I'm curious though.
Todd Besky's going to turn his multicade into a Bitcoin miner.
Hell yeah, that's what I'm thinking. All kinds of space.
I got you.
For every game of Pac-Man, you win.
If you move that multicade into this building, you could have your Bitcoin miner right there. Just put 25 cents in.
Plug it in the wall. Quarters. Here.
Doesn't CBI have a sock? Can't you guys use your special room?
Special room.
Our special room.
Our special Bitcoin mining room.
Jason sold me the special room once and never again.
Yeah. Well, there's the sock and then there's the special room. Which one are you talking about?
Oh, whichever one can get more.
Stop.
If it looks like this room, walk away from it real fast. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, the advantages are you can put little money in possibly, right? Like we said, it didn't take much to kind of get you up and running. And depending on
$300 a year,
you could make the quick way is you're looking at a turnaround of not a lot of money and still kind of having a return coming in on a regular
as long
basis.
As it's not Bitcoin, it seems like, right? It'd have to be Ethereum or Litecoin or some of the smaller.
A cryptocurrency that is ASIC resistant. So or you buy that ASIC hardware, you buy those little boxes and they'll compete with you for it. But there's a lot of other cryptos out there that are specifically designed for certain algorithms. And could someone find a way to, you know, exploit that algorithm and make their own little Ethereum ASIC box?
I mean, I got an SSL. Right.
No. Possible, maybe.
And I've got an SSLV box at home. That's the real reason I'm thinking. I mean, all it is ASICs, right? Come on. I'm like thinking to myself, oh. Awesome.
Nice. So, Zach, I got to know something here. So, other than this being a hobby, because quite honestly, you're not making enough money to say that it's actually something you can retire on.
Yeah.
So, for you, is it just the thrill of the hunt? Is it a hobby? Is it what's driving you right now? And is it an experiment that excites you or what? The whole
Sweet Lucy was a dancer.
Right. Sorry. Is it the gambling gene that comes out in you a little bit? No, or what is it
for
that's
me?
I
like the idea of just clicking a batch file every time I'm not gaming and making 50
even if
a
it's just
profit.
A few pennies a day, that's fine.
Sure,
I get it
exactly. Yeah, it's just the principle of the thing, but I like the something for nothing I like the idea that it is a it's a currency that no central authority has power of, so you can't
it's
just
like sticking it to the man a little
well,
bit type of
kind
thing,
of
maybe.
So you can't just print more, right? So you can't just print more if you know there's
but
a
he's
problem
not going to be living off the grid, that's for damn sure.
Yeah. Right.
You guys watch Rick and Morty at all?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that show. Did you see the one where I think it was the beginning of the season 3 or whatever, and he changes the 1 to a 0 on their economy. Everything goes to crap. Everything now they're exchanging.
What show is that, Jason?
Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty.
It's a Szechuan sauce.
Yeah,
remember?
They start immediately like, pants are the new currency. So, give me your pants.
It's important to remember. It's important
Sorry, go ahead.
It's important to remember that in America, we don't need it nearly as much as other people would. In America, we see maybe 2-3% inflation rates a year, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. 2-3%, maybe 1-3%. In countries,
depends on what bracket you're in, but okay.
Yes, right.
It really does.
Wow.
I said inflation. Inflation doesn't.
Oh,
yeah, inflation.
No,
I'm not talking about tax rates.
Well, I don't know about 2-3. What's the national inflation rate?
I think last year it was. I mean, it doesn't matter. Let's say
splitting hairs.
Let's say 1-2%
affected by
2.2%.
For everybody in this room, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, 2.2%. Right? There are countries like India, like Venezuela, where these people are essentially victim to the central banks that control their money, and they're looking at 300-325% hyperinflation every year. Think about that. Like, so having the decentralized store of value that they can get to easily because everybody's got cell phones now is a big deal to them. And it's a big, because you can't just shave off a piece of gold, right? Or you could, but it's a lot harder to do. There's a lot more cost associated with using gold as a medium of exchange. That's why you would make coins out of it.
It's not as
cool. Whatnot. No, it's not as cyber.
Well, I mean,
pull out a tooth and say, "I want that car." Yeah. You know?
I mean, like,
not quite as cyber.
I yearn for the days where people walk around with gold coins and chests, and you know, wagons with shotguns and stuff like that.
A coffer of coin for your goodly wife.
So, and I get that. I get that in America right now, it's hard to see that. But you know, you look back in 10 years, and you look at where the dollar was, you know, what the dollar did, and then you look at what Bitcoin did, and it might, you know, might be, hey, oh, that was a good idea. I think the US dollar is worth about 3%, maybe less, 3% of what it was in 1913 when the Federal Reserve was established, right? And imagine having a decentralized currency that has a controlled supply. You know, it has a controlled supply, so you can't just print more. So that price doesn't inflate. In theory, it's supposed to deflate over time as adoption grows. This is all speculative. Again,
that's always the key word. So if you have a church that passes the plates around and they follow the rules, and then you have an open thinking church that just puts like buckets in front of everybody, let's call those hypothetically a mega church.
Right.
You know, the value then is
tell us how you really feel.
So okay, so at the end of the day, you're that's again, it's a belief system what you're talking about, and that's where I was going with that pseudo joke or whatever. But if you're talking about a belief system, you need to get people to believe in it. You need to get people to assume it's worth
still seems like
X amount of things. So you know, the amount
still sounds like a cult. Todd says
It's a little cult.
The way you're describing this, Jason, just
still sounds like a cult.
Well, it's also worth noting that Jason came in dressed like a dark Sith today. He's black like from head to toe.
He looks like a hacker.
Eyes are a little red.
No more spoilers. Dan's listening. Shh.
And I would argue,
everybody see it but
Dan
me?
Gregory.
Yeah. I would argue you either Jess, have to convince people to buy into it, or you have them go through economic turmoil, like they're going through it in Venezuela, or like they had in Cyprus or Greece,
India.
Or that they have in India or in China, where they have restrictive controls on the financial system. And I think that's one way that you can start seeing, or we already are seeing that, is that people that want to get out of that restrictive system, be in something that's, you know, non-centrally managed, and that have access to their funds, and that, you know, they don't have to deal with inflation or the government confiscating some of it, or the banks closing.
Yeah, take that for example. The one thing that gold, you know, has, if you've got a crazy government over in Venezuela, or you know, in the U.S. there was a time where it was everybody has to turn in all of their gold to the Federal Reserve, right? So take us to some, and I'm not advising anyone, you know, do anything like that. But say you got Venezuela or India, for example. India recalled all of their currency, all of the paper currency, because they had such bad problems with counterfeit money, right? So with Bitcoin, if you're, you know, people are robbing you, whatever, you can memorize a passphrase that unlocks your private key in your head. You can store that completely in your head. So no one trying to rob you or, you know, whatnot could get that out of you. Now, well,
sure they can with a
gun.
Is there
a button?
With a gun.
Yeah, with a gun, it's very easy to get information out of your head.
But you could have two wallets. You could have one that's specifically for that with $5 worth of Bitcoin, and you could have
for the record, I'm paying my taxes this year, by the way. Like, just getting that out there.
We're pretty sure the FBI listened to this.
Right, right. So is there a button that says, I forgot my passphrase, and please help me?
No, that's the personal responsibility.
There is no such thing, right? Exactly.
That's the personal responsibility, and that's something a lot of people don't want to handle. And I understand that. I get that. I like my check going to my bank and not having to think about it. You know, so
me too.
It's about weighing those pros and cons for yourself and deciding, hey, do I want to drop $100 into this and see what it does?
Bitcoin, it's a personal choice.
Jess, what do you think? Bitcoin, it's a personal choice. Yeah, Jess, what do you think about cryptocurrency?
I don't trust it.
Fair enough.
Sure.
In the mortal words of Public Enemy,
she don't trust
it.
Can't
trust it. Right. Can't trust it.
So, guys, what a cool discussion tonight. I'm not sure we resolved anything here, but glad we had the discussion.
I think it was informative. I mean,
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, I learned a lot. Zach, we usually do a roundup at the end where we talk about stupid stuff that has nothing to do with the podcast, but. Shows you're watching, movies you've seen, books you've read, what words of wisdom?
I mean stuff I'm doing right now.
I don't know, yeah, just
like give, stuff you want to tell other people about.
Lay something on us
other than making
other than cryptocurrency,
culty money.
What else is going
cult
on?
Money.
Cult coin.
Here, I'll make the, hold on. Shh, quiet. Dan, what do you got?
Go print something on your 3D printer. I finally pulled the trigger, and I'm loving it right now. And also, read the book Priest by Matt Colville.
Is yours a polymer printing, or did you get like a metal, a fancy metal?
Where's
one?
That puzzle thing that you had?
No. Where's your 3D? Is there it you go. Just printed our printed our 3D logo there. Yeah.
How long did that take?
That one took about 30 minutes. That's a prototype.
Oh,
though.
Really?
That's not a high quality one. High quality ones on my printer will come out look like an injection molding type of printer. I got the FlashForge Dreamer 2.
What was your startup cost?
Great. I'm sorry?
How much did the unit, the 3D printer cost?
That one cost a little under two. Under $2,000.
So how long before
you're... They're coming way down.
So how long to your profits? You're making profits off it.
I bought it knowing I was just going to be a hobbyist with it and I'm going to have fun with it.
It's evil. Get rid of it.
I hike a lot. Is it plug and play? I'm going to lower my weights. I'm going to get creative with it. I've already printed a ton of stuff.
Can you make me a Dan Gregory?
I can. I can print a 3D. I was going to say,
can you make me a Bitcoin?
I can make you a Bitcoin. I'm going to print my own 3D Bitcoins, yes.
Is it pretty much plug and play, or is there a lot of...
they're a lot better than they used to.
Plug and play.
They're finicky. Yeah, you got to do is a balancing and a heating plate, and you got to know a little more than the average bear, but they're getting really close. It's almost set.
So when we come back,
it's almost plug and play.
So when we come back on the 8th, let's talk about 3D printing and all your adventures over the vacation. All
right. And in case anybody wants to buy me anything, XYZ print, the Da Vinci, I'd like.
Oh, the Da Vinci.
Thank you for Christmas. Basky, what do you got?
That's a good one.
Wow, completely off topic because I thought I was going to have. It's ski season, and I need new skis.
What do you get?
I am still an old guy that likes to ski moguls.
Rozzy,
K2. I have Dina Stars now, and I need help. So any input? I am looking at.
You didn't get the parabolics.
No rocker skis. Rocker means front back. No rounded tips. I need skinny, narrow waist skis. I want to still hit the moguls for an old man.
I still got my Rozzy 190s back in a garage somewhere.
I got K2s. It's funny you should mention those. Still.
So what do you think? Sundance this year? Little skiing?
Oh, yeah. I definitely want to get out west.
Jackson Hole?
So my quick plug, I guess, on skis. I was looking at a friend of mine is a ski instructor and keeps telling me local here in Traverse City, Shaggy's.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Shaggy's, I'm looking at some Shaggy skis.
I've heard that before. Yeah.
But it seems like everything's going to these wide skis, which is perfect for skiing out west. Terrible for skiing here in icy hills. Yeah. So I'm sorry. I didn't have anything our article was supposed to, I'll save it for another time. but skiing has been on the brain with all the snow, unfortunately, with this rain.
I like it, man.
Sorry.
Jason.
Let's see. I would say get out there and get on GitHub, see what's new and what's trending. There's some really cool projects that I've been playing with here lately. For some reason, I'm not really sure why, but the number of tools for our community, the ITSec community, is exploding right now. That's a little concerning for me. it makes me wonder, if you're starting to see the nefarious guys, which seem to be in abundance, putting out tools like we did in the old hacker.com days. They would put up all those tools that were all backdoored and had all kinds of things in them for all the noobs to grab a hold of. So definitely, download from source, take a look at it, and then, run
Verify
it and see
your hash.
About. Yeah, play with all the things.
Play with all the things. Mikey.
I just watched Sicario again since it first came out. Watching it again, it's such a good movie.
Sicario?
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
You guys haven't seen Sicario?
No. It's tell me about it.
Oh, it's amazing. It's set on the Mexican border with El Paso.
I'm in a Mexican. Radio. Sorry.
And it looks at like the FBI's point of view, and then looking at like the drug dealer's perspective. And I don't know how much more I can say without spoiling it, but it's really well done.
It's not a Netflix series. It's a movie.
It's on Amazon Prime right now.
I'm going to write that down. Okay. Sicario?
S-I-C-A-R-O.
It was directed by Denis Villeneuve, whatever his name is. He did The Rival, and I forgot what else he did recently. It has Emily Blunt in it, and Del Toro's in it. And
Benicio?
Yeah.
Benicio
Del Toro. Jess always hears about these things. Jess, have you heard? Is this new?
It came out in 2015.
Nice.
So on your scale, Breaking Bad is usually a pretty good watermark. Everybody agrees generally that it was pretty darn good. Is it?
Well, it's
better?
A movie, so it's not a series. So
well, I know, just kind of like
movie wise,
each one of those.
I mean, it's definitely like
a Usual Suspect,
like a 8 or 9 out of 10 type movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's worth it. It's dark, but it's worth it. Jess, what do you got?
No Country for Good Men type thing.
Close. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Who's that girl?
Have you caught up on Mr. Robot, anybody?
No. Yes. That's it's end of the season.
Get out of the studio. I'm just kidding.
Next week, I'm off work all week, and I've got to watch the kids, so we're going to be catching up on,
I guess, Mr. Robot. I have many flights coming up. I still have to catch up on Game of Thrones.
Ooh, oh, really?
Lucky.
Zach.
So something I've been learning is do not be afraid to say you don't know how to do something, but you know how to learn how to do it. So I did a incident response gig this weekend where a client got hacked with a CryptoLocker type.
No name is being shared.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. A CryptoLocker type
problem.
And Jason helped me out with deploying a server that rather than clone drives to get this company back up and running, he deployed what's called a fog server, and it sped me way up in cloning drives and getting stuff back up and running. I had never heard of that. I was planning on cloning drives. That would have taken forever. GitHub. But because Jason showed me this open source program called Fog, I was able to do that in so much less time. So thank you, Jason, for that.
So someone else fails, call Jason.
Call Jason.
Jason's my technical phone a friend now. Yeah. He's definitely surpassed whoever else. Guys, mine is something I tell my kids every day, and that's do something that matters. Do something that matters. Take tomorrow, take the next day. Whenever you listen to this podcast, do something that matters. Try to do it for someone else. I promise you, you'll feel better. You might actually make a difference. And 9 times out of 10, it's come back to profit me too. Maddie, take us out. What do you got?
No, I don't get to say what I'm doing.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Say what you're doing, then take us out.
For me, I am going to make it back to see The Last Jedi for a second time. I saw it the first time when we did our little event.
I'm seeing it with my boys this week too.
And I'm going to tell you right now, at first pass, I'm putting it up at number one or two in the whole franchise. I really, really enjoyed the movie.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, really good.
Even the Mickey Mouse bit. Really?
Revenge of the Sith was...
I mean, you look at it. And
it took a little bit to get going, my overall.
It did. But no,
not
overall,
giving any spoilers, Dan. I just thought it took a little bit.
I rolled in and, you know, organizing an event. And I'm running up and downstairs, so I already had my blood pressure going. And the whole opening sequence, you're right into it. It's a lot of intensity. There's a lot of stuff going on. I liked all the callbacks. I liked all the different little bits and pieces.
Comics
I missed
cool.
stuff that is blatantly obvious to everybody else because I don't know where my head was.
I like there was actually humor, you know, like a lot of them, and they're normally coming.
Yeah, we cracked
dry.
Up a lot. There was a lot of laughter in the theater during that one.
You know, and there's a gross out moment in the beginning of the film that, you know,
spoilers for Dan.
Yeah, there's a milking.
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
that was
so
awful.
Anyways, I watched milking. It, and my wife and I both thought,
can you milk a cat, Fokker?
Yeah, it's not far off of that. So,
a little Geppetto.
Anyways, I'm going to go back and watch it again. But right now, a lot of the different podcasts or YouTube channels I watch, they're really highly divided if they're hardcore Star Wars fans. It seems to be general population really liked it. And where you get the division right now, if you're hardcore into Star Wars, you're either light side or the dark side. You loved it or you hated it. There doesn't seem to be gray area. So I'm going to go back, watch it again with my kids, and see how that goes.
He wants an excuse.
Yeah. I may see it a couple more times. Randy Walker's seen it like 9 times now.
Yeah, Randy's seen it as of 4 or 5 times by Monday. He watched it 3 times on opening night. We were just the first.
That's not a bad thing.
I wish I would have had an invite.
Well, no. We all wish we had open schedules.
I sent you an invite, clown. You got my email on spam.
He's probably got a bunch of Bitcoin farming PCs in his basement.
All right, so to kind of recap tonight, we actually only ended up with 2 segments because they were so good.
Great discussion tonight.
Yeah, we did intro to cryptocurrencies, so you can catch that, learn more about the basics of cryptocurrencies on segment 2, which we're concluding now. We dove in all over the place. So basically, if you want to deep dive into cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, the pros and cons, how to set it up, how to make money or not make money if you're Jason, you can check those out in a couple of days here on securityjabber.com. All our other shows are up there. You can also check out Twitter at securityjabber and then Facebook, patreon.com/secjabber. It's also worth noting we're going to take a couple week break here. We're going to be back on January 8th. And apparently we're going to talk about how Dan likes to 3D print stuff.
If you miss us, call Dan Gregory at 248. Oh, sorry.
Oh. And Merry Christmas.
That could backfire.
Guys, I want to take 30 seconds. I want to take 10 seconds to say thank you so much. This is a newer experience for me. Learned a ton. Had a blast. It's a privilege to be able to sit with this many minds in this room.
Nine.
Oh, thanks, Dan Gregory. Oh, wait. That was Zach. Zach Sarakin. Thanks, man.
Thanks,
thank
Zach.
You.
All right.
Did you talk about where you
Yeah, I did. Oh, while you were messing with my headset.
Oh, did I do that?
Yeah.
By the way, this is the day in 1961 when Goa won freedom from Portugal and joined independent India.
Happy Independence Day. I observed that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Have a great night.
Could have done it better with blockchain.
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Whatever. We'll see you guys in the new year.
See you guys.
No, you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you.